This is PCJ Radio International. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is Media Network Plus.
Well, hello, friends and listeners. I'm Keith Pellon, and it's very nice to have you with me. We have a number of things to get to today, including some big December program notes. So get ready for a pen and paper as we give that out later on in the program. But first, we're going to talk about social media. Now, there are many news organizations around the world today where at one point, maybe they would have the news in their broadcasts, and then when the internet came along, they would put it on their website. But many of these news organizations, like the BBC, CNN, ABC, which is the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, now have other platforms. For example, social media. There are some stories, however, that maybe were not popular to begin with, but because people like them and share them, the story got much wider distribution. Well, Hal Crawford is the editor-in-chief of one of the most popular news sites in Australia. That's 9MSN. He began a project called Share Wars, and to try to find out what news people share and why. He speaks next to our good friend, Richard Ady.
Share Wars is a project that I started with a fellow editor named Andy Hunter. It's a project to understand the drivers of sharing on social networks, in news particularly. And what that means is, we understand a lot about what drives pure traffic.
We know about what people are clicking on, don't we?
That's right. So that has been my job over the past decade, is to make sure I can maximise traffic to a site. But what we don't, or what we understand less well, is what drives people to share stories on social networks. And over the past 3 years, that's become increasingly important.
Why is that important?
One is it drives direct traffic to your site. So in a purely economic sense, say one of the main brands that I look after, Nine News Online, that might get between 10 and 15% of its traffic directly from Facebook. That is a link in someone's feed, they click on that, they come to our site.
Right.
So that's a big traffic driver. There's another, and I think more important reason. If you get a story right on social networks, basically you're getting it right for everything. It's a bit of a zeitgeist thing. If you hit the tone right on social networks, then you have got the tone right across the board. You're not just going to get traffic from Facebook, you are going to get social interest, you're going to get other media coverage, and you're going to get a big traditional audience.
It's a kind of wisdom of crowds judgment.
It is, and the reason it is a better indicator of value than just straight traffic is that people have been willing to put their personal brand against that. If you see something on your Facebook feed and you choose to also share it, you're saying, yes, I endorse this, I find it interesting, or this accords with my view of the world.
But it's not a badge of quality necessarily. And I've read something you wrote about this where you name the example of a very large woman, a fat woman who wanted to get fatter. You know, it's like man bites dog kind of story. Now, if that gets shared on social media, it doesn't mean that it's a story that's sort of contributing journalism for the good of humanity.
I suppose I'd want to have a go at you on a number of fronts on that, in that statement, Richard. One thing is that I think there are many kinds of value, and I think a really interesting story about a very fat woman who wants to become fatter.
The fattest woman in the world.
Yeah, that was her ambition. I think that's a great story. If you interview that woman, you're going to get a lot of insight into a strange mind. So for me, that's totally valid. Now, the thing about, okay, yeah, you mentioned that's a reverse story. And it was one of the structures that we uncovered that people share highly. And that is, take any given situation, what would you expect, and then just totally flip it around.
Okay, so you did the Share Wars project, which was what? Gathering a lot of data, I suppose.
Yes, we went out and targeted 118 of the world's big news sites, and we scraped their homepages, collected all the stories that they published on those homepages, put them in a big database and we queried the social media APIs. And that's just a way of saying that we asked Facebook, for example, what the social count, what the share count was on any particular article. And that's public information. What is not public is no one has accumulated all that data and actually interrogated it. And that's what we've done with ShareWars. So we did that for a 3-month data collection period. And we gathered from those 118 sites, we gathered something like 1.3 million stories. So huge amount of data. And I say for anyone interested in the media, it makes for absolutely compelling. You open the Excel file, it takes something like 5 minutes to open the entire file because it's so monstrous. And then you start looking at the top shared stories and you cannot tear yourself away from the content. These stories are evolved to kind of attract your attention.
Give me some examples. What were you finding?
Because okay.
What I am concerned about is that you're going to find the old-fashioned sort of American tabloid of aliens turned our sun into an olive.
Yeah. You definitely find that kind of yarn, and that, I think that's fine. So you find those, but what we really were really surprised about were you find a lot of political stories and interest group stories. In the 3-month period that we collected the data, we found a lot of gay rights stories. So they were, I mean, we're talking hundreds of thousands of shares on Facebook. Let me give you an example of how this sits in terms of a traditional news mix. The most shared story of the period was the story where one man ate another guy on the overpass. I can't remember which American city it was. Horrific attack. Resonated with all of these kind of primeval...
It's an ancient fear, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it is. Cannibalism. And, you know, cannibalism was very hot in the period, and so were bath salts. There was this whole kind of moral panic about this drug that people were using called bath salts, and it was a zombie apocalypse and all that. But also in the period, there were huge amounts, and very close to the top, my shared stories, gay rights stories. There are also lots of awe-inspiring stories. Like one that I particularly loved was a bloke who was a logger, and this has a little bit of a reverse in it, and he looked after at one particular elm tree where he was in New England somewhere for 50 years, and it was suffering from Dutch elm disease, and he was trimming the limbs off and looking after it. The tree's name was Herbie and his name was us. I can't remember. Anyway, he looked after it. The tree died, then he died. He was 103. The tree was like 217 or something. And his mates, when the tree had died, cut it down, kept the timber, and they buried that old man in a coffin made of the timber. So that kind of big life arc story, all this kind of amazing stuff about how someone who's a logger can look after a tree, and it gets up there and it gets traffic, and I think that's wonderful.
How do you use this to inform what you're doing?
We have always been strongly focused on the audience, and a little slogan that I use is that the audience is right. Don't excuse yourself from the process. As a journalist, you're part of it. And what you think is right is what you should be publishing. Don't publish anything you don't believe in. But if the audience is right and you really accept that, then you use whatever tools you can to find out what they want. And until about 2 or 3 years ago, we were using analytical tools like Omniture and, you know, people have other things like Google Analytics. And so you see traffic coming in, but really it's a negative tool. All you can tell with that stuff is what to remove from the page. It won't tell you what to create. By actually having this mechanism to see what people value publicly, you get an insight into what kind of story ideas you might want to look at. So, you know, we know, for example, that people care a lot about gay rights. Really, for me, as a mainstream editor, that's a bit of a revelation. So it kind of frees you up. We know that people care about dog breeds. Well, of course, we know that people care about cannibalism. We know that people won't necessarily share sexual material on social networks. It goes against the conventional wisdom that sex sells. Sex does not sell on social networks. People will not put their personal brand against, you know, salacious material. They don't want to. Therefore, you won't get any traffic.
I'm wondering where this leaves something that was such a cornerstone of journalism for such a long time and is still there. When I came into journalism, we used to talk about front page leads in newspapers as often they were called a BBS, So a boring but significant story, perhaps about interest rates or about international relations or something like that. And there was a kind of understanding that perhaps not that many people would read that story, but it was still the most important story of the day. And so there it would go on the front page. Mm. Where does it leave that kind of story?
I think what this approach does is it confronts journalists in a number of ways. The old ways are not entirely wrong, but they're not entirely right either. So my take on that is, if a story is important, it is possible to make it interesting. So if the interest rate story really should be leading the page, then it should be leading it because a significant proportion of people are actually interested in reading it. To take it to an extreme, if no one read it, then of course it wouldn't be valid in that position.
Isn't that going to take more work to kind of make it more interesting? It's much more work to make it interesting than to report on somebody who is just of themselves interesting, like, you know, Lady Gaga.
Yeah. Look, there's a lot of laziness in journalism. Deep down, there's an intellectual laziness, And one of the intellectual lazinesses is that there's this dichotomy. And on the one hand, you have the worthy stuff that is terribly boring. And on the other hand, you have the really engaging, interesting stuff, but it's just complete rubbish. That dichotomy from worthy to rubbish is just completely false. And
it's not completely false. There is a certain truth to it.
I'll tell you.
Not always false.
There might be truth to it from an audience point of view, but Richard, for you and I, and we're thinking, okay, you know what? Let's make the best story we can do. If we come at it thinking, you know, RBA interest rates are just such a snooze fest, that's just lazy. You know, if I was your editor or you were my editor, you would be saying, come on, let's make this work. Mm. Let's put some thought into it. Let's just not do this by rote. Let's make this front page really sing.
I can see that. And I can see how you might begin to incorporate, perhaps you've already started, the knowledge that you got out of the Share Wars project. But I was looking at it this morning at your page, and there is a Lady Gaga story. I heard voices in my head. There is a Big Brother, Confessions of the Final Three, and in pics, the Kardashians and their supercars. So you're still doing that stuff.
You know, I started working for the West Australian, and whenever you'd go to a barbecue or whatnot, people would say, you know, you work for a really crap newspaper. And I once worked for Radio Netherlands, so I've kind of gone mainstream, niche public broadcaster, mainstream again. Many times in my career, I've had conversations about where you effectively end up defending the mainstream news mix. And sometimes it feels like you're defending the Australian population. My experience of having edited 9MSN is that I've become more and more respectful of the mainstream audience. I actually feel that you try to sell them old news, they won't go for it. Try to sell them a speculative story about politics, they won't go for it. Why? Because nothing happened. When you entered journalism, Richard, I don't know what people were saying, but when I entered in 1995, people were lamenting the state of journalism. Now, in 2013, I don't know what people think of 1995, but they probably think it was some kind of golden age. I mean, give me a break. You know, we were not covering important stories back in 1995. We're missing stories all the time. The idea that, oh my God, what are we going to do because we don't have the resources to get the important stories, in that statement there's this assumption that we have always covered the important stories when it's pretty obvious that we've missed as many as we've got. So if you put that to bed and you just, you know, I'm an optimist, so let's focus on doing something worthwhile. Things like Share Wars tell us things that we didn't know before about media and about consumption. And I really think that's the way to go.
One of the things you just mentioned was resources. In 95, there were a lot more resources in newsrooms, especially in newspaper newsrooms. You'd probably kill to have a bit more of the resources that were around in 95 for your newsroom.
I would absolutely love to, and we will try to get the right business model to maximise those resources. And I am not particularly commercially minded, but the background that I've had at 9MSN, this foundation of get your commercials right, so you've got a solid foundation, so you're not afraid of being shut at any minute, then you can focus on having a news product that works from the ground up. I don't really believe in, this is funny because we're in the ABC building, I definitely believe in public broadcasters, but I don't believe in philanthropic injections of funds into media where it allows you to become divorced from the audience.
So you'll be using more of the insights you gleaned from Share Wars to tackle stories that perhaps hitherto you haven't been doing.
Definitely. When you're a news editor and you're trying to guide your guys into stories that will work for the audience, there is a fair amount of creativity and imagination that has to come into play. And if you can use a simple technique like the reverse to get a better idea, it can help, right?
That is interesting because the reverse is always fundamentally interesting and it always has been.
Yeah, that's right. And we're not setting the world on fire. We're discovering things that people have always known. It's really nice to make them explicit. And when you've made them explicit, if this is a real theory, it has predictive power. So I would predict to you that, okay, let's talk about taxi drivers. What do people think about taxi drivers? They think that in Sydney they think they're rude and they think that they are just doing it for the money. So let's find a taxi driver who gives people fares for free and is like monkish, is a bit of a philosopher. Let's like, go out there and find him because he's going to be an interesting guy. We'll write a feature on him and it'll work.
Hal Crawford, the editor-in-chief of 9MSN, speaking to our good friend Richard Ady. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
The British DX Club is one of the world's leading DX clubs, with hundreds of members both in the UK and around the globe. BDXE produce a comprehensive monthly magazine called Communication, covering all aspects of the DXing hobby. The BDXE Audio Circle is also available and is a monthly program of DX catches and general chat about radio. For more information, please write to the British DX Club, 10 Hemdene Hill, Caversham, Reading, RG4, 7SB in the United Kingdom, or visit the website at www.bdxc.org.uk. That's www.bdxc.org.uk.
Hi, this is Ian McFarland. If you're an SWL and feel nostalgic for the good old days of shortwave, you'll be interested in three sets of CDs that Colin Newell and I have produced. The first gives you 100 idents and interval signals from stations around the world. Then there's the foreign language recognition course that will help you identify the myriad languages that you can hear on shortwave. And the newest CD set, a look at the past 20 years in shortwave broadcasting with some of my broadcasting colleagues, and a look into the future. The proceeds from the sale of these CDs are in aid of a charity, a food bank for the less fortunate in my city of Duncan, British Columbia in Canada. Learn more about these CDs on the dxer.ca internet website. That's dxer.ca. Good listening, everyone.
Now, for those of you who follow PCJ on a regular basis, as you know, since the month of May, we've been doing a series of test transmissions targeting Southeast and East Asia. This was really done to find out, well, first of all, how many people listen on shortwave and who exactly is listening. The results have been quite surprising, very surprising indeed. Now, last Sunday, November the 24th, was the 85th anniversary program of the Happy Station Show. The official anniversary was on the 19th, which was a Tuesday. Now, on the 24th, we did a special program airing some clips of PCJ from the late 1920s, 30s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and so on. And we ended the transmission with something that many people thought they would never hear on shortwave again. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Well, I'm certain that's going to bring back a lot of memories for people. That, of course, was the Radio Netherlands interval. And we ended that program with that, and we got quite a big response from it, actually. It was something that was decided at the last moment. Somebody said to me, you know, it is the 85th anniversary show of Happy Station. Maybe you should end with that. And, well, we did. So when you thought it, the last time you heard it was on Radio Netherlands' last broadcast, well, you're very much mistaken. It was there again. Now, let's talk about some of the special programs that we have coming up on PCJ in the month of December. Our holiday programs begin on December the 8th. Now, on Sunday, December the 8th, from 1330 UTC to 1430 UTC, we're going to be broadcasting a special edition of Happy Station from 1994. It was a program that was presented by Ginger Da Silva, and it is of Pete Myers when he returned to Beirut, where he lived between 1974 and 1976. And that's the first holiday special. On December the 15th, at the same time, 1330 to 1430 UTC, we present the first Happy Station Christmas special with a very special reading of a play called A Very White Christmas from 1972. Then on December the 22nd, we present our annual Happy Station Christmas show that is always a lot of fun. The frequency for that is 9335 kilohertz. That's 9335 kilohertz, targeting listeners in Southeast and East Asia. Now, that program on December 22nd will also be broadcast to North America, where we'll have the times posted on our website very soon. And for that transmission, we'll be broadcasting from a 100 kilowatt out of the new WRMI site in Okeechobee, Florida, targeting listeners in North America. So you can find that information at our website, which will be made available in a few days at www.pcjmedia.com. Now, December 29th, we have something really special that we haven't really done before, and that is we're going to be doing a live broadcast between 1330 and 1430 UTC. That's right, a live broadcast for listeners in Southeast and East Asia. Sort of a way to say goodbye to 2013 and hello to 2014. Now, many of you listening right now could be in Europe, and it'd probably be very early in the morning, maybe 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. Listeners in North America will be maybe 8:30 or 9:30 or 10:30 or 7:30 or 6:30 in the morning, whatever it is. But if you are up, you can still tune into it. You still can tune into it. Now, you may not be able to pick up our frequency for the region, which is 9335 kilohertz, but there is a website that I've talked about before called globaltuners.com, and it's free to sign up, and it is really fascinating because you can log on to different radios around the world to hear what's on shortwave in the area. Now, our programs for the region of Southeast and East Asia, we know that we have quite a few people that log on to the Global Tuners radio in Hong Kong, Philippines, and also Indonesia. Now, for this live program, we're going to be calling people up live. A very different Happy Station show, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Now, if you want to take part in it, do let us know, and make sure that you are available between 1330 and 1430 UTC, and we will call you up. And if there's too many, of course, we can't call you up, but you know, we'll try to get in, of course, as many as we possibly can. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. All right, now it's time to turn to our propagation editor, Dan Hensley, to find out what we can expect over the next 7 days. Dan?
Here's propagation for the week from November 30th to December 6th, 2013. The 10.7 centimeter flux starts out on November 30th and December 1st at 135 up to 140, December 2nd, on December 3rd and 4th, 145 up to 150, December 5th and 6th. The A index for the first 4 days of the week is 5. That's from November 30th to December 3rd, spiking at 10 on December 4th, down to 5 on December 5th, and on December 6th, spiking once more at 15. The KP index is steady at 2 from November 30th to December 3rd, going up to 3 on December 4th, down to 2 December 5th, spiking at 4 on December 6th. Sunspots 1903 through 1906 are present this week. 1903 and 04 are on the sun's east side, and 05 and 06 are on the sun's west side. 1904 and 05 have beta-gamma magnetic fields that harbor energy for M-class solar flares. Neither sunspot, however, is facing Earth nor actively flaring. No coronal holes are observed this week. There's a new phone app available that allows people to monitor the sun. You can read more about that at our radio propagation page, www.pcjmedia.com/RPROP. Back to you, Keith.
All right, thank you very much, Dan. Well, guess what? We are now out of time. If you want to contact us to let us know what you think of the program, our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. You can also find out this program and also past editions by going to the website pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus. And of course, since it is the last Saturday of the month, there's also the monthly edition that is airing on some of our partner stations, and that's also available at our website. And you can find out stations where you can listen to it on. Next month, by the way, in December, we have some interesting shows coming up. One of them is going to be our annual bloopers show. And not just bloopers from this program, of which we have many, I'll tell you that, but also for bloopers from around the world, some classic ones, and a lot of other surprises as well. So until next time, friends, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you well, saying so long, take care, 73 and 88 to the ladies.